Բարի Ռեգո, սիրելի հարցակիցներ, ինչպես խոստացանք այս շաբաթ պիտի ունենանք շատ կարևոր հյուրը Իլինոյսեն, այսօր մեզ հետ կմիանայինք հեռախոսով եւ պիտի ունենանք իրեն այդ հարցազրույցը այդ քիրքի մասին, որ ինքը նախավարդրաստած է եւ բավականին լուրջ հարցեր կան այդ քիրքի մեջ հրյաներու ցեղասպանությունը հայ քրիստոնյաներուն, այդ քիրքի վերաբերյալ այդ քիրքի հեղինակը եւ ռեսերչերը եւ հիստորիոնը Christopher John Jerkins հավասիկ պիտի խոսինք իրեն հետ եւ շատ բիչի երկար ինտրոդյուսն են պիտի անցնենք, որովհետեւ հերախոսի ուտիստս եւ մեզ հետ ինքը պիտի միանա։ Good evening Christopher, how are you?
Very good Pedro, how are you?
I'm going to basically introduce you to the audience, Christopher John Jerkins,
sure.
I'd say. Thank you for taking our invitation to talk to us on live TV, first of all. I know it is 3 hours ahead in Illinois right now. So thank you for this special time that you gave us to the Armenian and to our audience.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and it's an honor to appear on your program.
I would like to start with a little bit background of you, basically. How did you become interested in writing such a book about the Armenians, you being an American?
I began by investigating Albert Einstein and studying the history of the theory of relativity. And I came to the conclusion that Einstein was a plagiarist, and I looked into his background and discovered that he was also a Zionist. And in studying Zionism, it led me into studying Jewish crimes against humanity and crypto-Judaism. And all of that, through a circuitous route, took me to the Armenian genocide, and I mentioned it in my book on Einstein's plagiarism called The Manufacture and Sale of Saint Einstein. And when I published that book, I received many requests for more information about the Jewish involvement in the Armenian genocide. So I decided to write a book about that as well, and I put that up on the web.
And
I started putting that up on the web back in October of last year.
Have you had any threats about it or basically discriminating phone calls about the book that you wrote?
I've received death threats, which are general, not specifically related to the Armenian genocide.
So basically you've received death threats about the topics that you talk about?
Yes. I write extensively about Zionism and the threat that it poses to Americans and to the world generally, and I write extensively about Jewish history.
And in the book, I would like to basically, I would like you to start talking about the book when you came to a conclusion to write about the Armenian genocide. You have some information that, about Amalekites in the book, starting from page 96. Could you elaborate on solid information or proofs on that?
In the Hebrew Bible, there are many passages which state that the Jews have a mortal enemy whom they call Amalek, and it is for them a racial belief that there is a tribe of Amalekites who are out to destroy the Jews, and God has commanded the Jews to completely exterminate the Amalekites down to the last man, woman, and child. They cannot leave a single Amalekite left alive. And when I began looking into that Jewish belief system, I found many writings in the Hebrew Bible, in the Jewish Talmud, and in Jewish Kabbalistic writings where it expressly states that in order for the Jewish people to receive redemption, in order for them to have their Messiah come and be restored in Palestine and build the Jewish temple, they have to exterminate the Amalekites. And the Jewish people associated the Armenians with the Amalekites. They believe that the Armenian people represent this racial enemy of the Jews, which has to be exterminated. And there were many side issues that relate to that. The Armenians were the first nation to become Christians, and the Jews have always waged a war against Christianity. And that also played into it. And it is an absolute religious commandment for Jews that they have to exterminate the Amalekites, which means that they have to exterminate the Armenians.
Is it until the modern days, until the starting of 1900s, I mean, what kind of solid writings they have that we could associate with the Armenian genocide?
Yes, it is. It's a very modern belief, and it's a belief that is passed along to different people whom the Jewish people associate as their enemy. In the Bible, it says that God will have a war with Amalek from generation to generation. And at the specific time of the Armenian genocide, both in the phase that took place from 1894 to 1896 and at the height of the genocide in 1915, we have contemporary writings in Hebrew in Jewish publications where they call the Armenians the Amalekites. And they state that they have no mercy for them because they are the Amalekites. And you can find this in Yair Oran's book, Zionism and the Armenian Genocide, The Banality of Indifference. And you can also find it in Eliot Horowitz's book, which I believe is called Reckless Rights. And you can find it in the Encyclopedia Judaica under Armenians, and also in the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia under Armenians.
And basically, could you elaborate how did they make it possible to basically make their vision, enable their vision to basically do the mass murder of Armenians?
Well, that gets into the Turkish Empire. And the Turkish Empire in the period of the 1890s, which is also the same period that political Zionism took root in the writings of Pinsker and Theodor Herzl, the Zionist Jews had a stronghold within the Turkish Empire in the Salonikan Jewish community, where there were many Jewish bankers and Jewish Freemasons who were organizing a revolt against the Turkish Empire. Because one of the chief goals of Zionism was to break apart the Turkish Empire so that they could take Palestine from the Arabs and give it to European Jews. And they also had to destroy the Russian Empire because the majority of European Jews lived in Russia, and Russia would not let the Jews go because they knew it would result in economic hardships. So they engineered the First World War in order to break apart the Russian Empire and break apart the Turkish Empire. And they could engineer the First World War by pitting Christians against Muslims. And they decided that one way they could pit Christians against Muslims was to have the Sultan start killing Armenians. And they did that by convincing the Sultan that it was the Armenians who were going to conduct a revolution against the Sultan and that the Christians were plotting to destroy the Turkish Empire. And so the Sultan began committing atrocities in the Balkans and in Turkey itself, and that started to create an outrage in England and America against Islam. Christians started to become pitted against Muslims.
Right.
Then the Salonikan Jews, through their Committee of Union and Progress, and meeting in Freemasonic lodges, there was a man named Emmanuel Caruso, who was the grandmaster of the Macedonian Resorta Masonic Lodge in Salonika. And they, through funding through Italian banking Jews and ultimately through the Rothschild bankers of the city of London, fomented a revolution against the Sultan, which began, I think, in June of 1908. And they finally deposed the Sultan in 1909. And they then started committing heinous atrocities against Christians in the Balkans and specifically against the Armenians in order to use that to cause the Christians to want to wage war against the Turkish Empire. And that resulted in the Balkan Wars. And then the Balkan Wars resulted in World War One. And in World War One, the leaders of the so-called Young Turks were actually all crypto-Jews from Salonika. And the chief of those was Talat Pasha. And Talat Pasha instituted a program of extermination of the Armenians in order to bring America and England into the region as Christian saviors of the Armenians. And they also attacked Russia because Russia had traditionally been a strong defender, especially of Greek Christians, in the Turkish Empire. And in this way, they were able to foment the First World War. And another motivation they had to kill the Armenians was the fact that the Armenians were at that time considered the most intelligent and most successful group of people on the face of the earth. And the Jews wanted to take over their businesses and their residences and give them to Russian Jews who would emigrate into the region, eventually pushing them into Palestine. So they wanted to get rid of a business competitor, and that would also contribute to the destruction of the Turkish Empire, which they sought, because the Armenians were often statesmen and controlled the bureaucracy of the Turkish Empire, and the Turks were very inefficient, but the Armenians were very intelligent and were very successful. They were the best doctors, the best lawyers throughout the Turkish Empire. And by killing off the Armenians, they ensured the ultimate destruction of the Turkish Empire.
And I would like to go back. You talked about Salonika. Where did the initial movement start of these crypto Jews who came to Salonika, basically?
Jews had a very strong foothold in the Spanish Empire, and they had very good relations with Spanish Catholics. And whenever the Jewish people settle in an area, they start to tend to have good relations with the native people, and Jewish leaders don't like that because it leads to Jewish assimilation. And Jewish leaders try to keep Jews segregated from Christians and from other people so that they can preserve the Jewish race until the time of the Messianic Age, when they believe the Jewish Messiah will come and redeem the Jewish people and deliver them to Jerusalem and to Palestine. So the Jewish leaders orchestrated in 1492, the same year that they tried to send ships to America to create a homeland for the Jews, but that was unsuccessful. So they expelled the Jews from Spain, and many of the Jews from Spain went to Salonika, Greece, or Macedonia, and settled there. Other Jews remained in the Spanish Empire, and they had a choice to either convert to Christianity or die or leave. Those were their three options. So those Jews who remained in Spain, many of them pretended to be Catholics, and they would pretend to be the most ardent Catholics. You could always identify them by the fact that they were the most religious Catholics. But in secret, they would continue to practice Judaism. And another event that took place within the Turkish Empire itself is around 1666, there was a Jewish man named Shabbatai Tzevi, who thought that he was the coming of the Jewish Messiah and that he would redeem the Jewish people and restore them to Palestine. This, of course, incurred the wrath of the Sultan, who did not want the Jews to take over his empire. So he latched on to Shabbatai Tzevi and insisted that he convert to Islam or he'd cut his head off. And Shabbatai Tzevi pretended to convert to Islam so that he could subvert the religion from within. And many of his followers pretended to convert to Islam. And like the supposedly Catholic Jews of Spain, they were often the most ardently religious Islamic people in the Turkish Empire, even though in secret they would remain Jews. And they would even not tell their children that they were Jews until they reached a certain age. I think it was 13 or 18.
Right.
And this formed a cult in Salonika. And Shabbatai Tzevi, when he died, Jews believe that the souls can be reincarnated, like the Buddhists believe, especially within this sect of Judaism, which
right.
to be known as the Dernmei. And they believe that the soul of Shabbatai Tzevi passed on to a man named Baruch Yah Russo. And Baruch Yah Russo established a Dernmei cult in Salonika, Greece. Now, these Jews were heavily into the Lurian Kabbalah, which is a subversive movement that instituted communism and other forms of revolution. And these were the leaders of the revolutionary movement throughout Europe and ultimately in the Turkish Empire. And they used as their model to destroy the Turkish Empire what a Jew in Italy was doing named Giuseppe Mazzini. And Giuseppe Mazzini tried to subvert the Kingdom of Sardinia in Italy with Freemasonic lodges in which he instituted what he called the Young Italians, Young Italy.
Right.
And he also established the Carbonari, and they were secret societies that tried to overthrow the Kingdom of Sardinia and solve the Italian question. And he joined the Crimean War on the side of Turkey, England, and France, excuse me, in the hopes that at the end of that war, there would be a peace conference, as there always is at the end of the war, and he could raise the issue of the Italian question and solve it at that peace conference. Now, the Zionist Jews following Theodor Herzl planned the First World War in the hopes that they could break up the Turkish Empire, free up Palestine, and break up the Russian Empire and free up the Jews of Russia to move to Palestine. And they hoped that at the end of that war, there would be peace conferences. And when the empires were broken up, all the small peoples could petition to have their own states formed. And they promised the Armenians that if the Armenians sacrificed themselves, after the First World War, the Armenians would be able to form an independent Republic of Armenia. And they also said that the Jews would be able to form an independent Judea in Palestine.
Right.
And that was the purpose of the First World War, was to break up all these empires so that all the small peoples would form racially and ethnically segregated small nations throughout the region, and then the Jews would be safe when they moved to Palestine. Because they feared that if they simply bought Palestine from the Sultan, as the Rothschilds had offered to do, that the Arabs, especially Egyptian Arabs, would turn against them and fight against them, and the Catholic Church would view them as the Antichrist and would crush them. So they had to be more clever about it. And one of the reasons that they wanted to give that it was necessary for the Jews to do this, to form a nation in Palestine, was the fact that small ethnicities were subject to genocides and persecutions. And they themselves committed genocide against the Armenians to set the example for the world that it was necessary for the Jews to form a nation so that this would not happen to them.
So basically we could say Armenians were sacrificed and to basically form a Jewish state. Is that what we're trying to get to?
That's exactly correct. And the word that was used long before the European Holocaust was Holocaust, which means a burnt offering or a sacrifice. And in the literature from the 1890s through about 1939, the Armenian Genocide was often referred to in the express terms that it was a Holocaust, a burnt offering. And you had traitors among the Armenian people, especially in the Armenian church and in Armenians' relations with Britain, which was controlled by the Rothschild interests, who were Zionist Jewish bankers. You had Armenians who were willing to sacrifice Armenians in order to bring this about. They were willing to sacrifice 1.5 million of their own people so that at the end of the war they would be given an independent nation. And I'm sure many of them were themselves crypto-Jews. And there was a Reverend Filion, I think was his name, who wrote amazing prophecies around 1895 and 1896.
Could you repeat the name again, please?
I think it was Filion, F-I-L-I-A-N. It's
okay.
Certainly in my book. And this man specifically said that there would be a Battle of Armageddon, which was the First World War, and that there would be large massacres of Armenians far exceeding anything that had happened up to that point, which was 1896, I believe. So it was obviously all planned out, and it worked very well for the Jews, except for the fact that the Jews of Europe didn't want to go to Palestine at the end of the war. But all the things that they anticipated would happen, they actually brought about. They destroyed the Russian people in the same way that they destroyed the Turkish people with Freemasonic Jews who subverted the government and overthrew it. But the Armenians got shortchanged at the end of the war. They had a short-lived republic, I think, from 1918 or 1919 to 1920.
21.
But there again, the crypto-Jews who took over the Turkish Empire turned against the Armenians and attacked them as they were forming their independent nation and sandwiched them between Ataturk, Kemal, Mustafa Kemal, who was also a Salonikin crypto-Jew, chased the Armenians up until the provinces which had previously been controlled by the Russians and essentially went to war with Russia, and which was then Soviet Russia, which was controlled by Trotsky, who was another crypto Jew whose real name was Lev Bronstein. And the resolution of that was that Armenians were forced to give up their sovereignty or continue to fight the Turks and again face genocide. So they elected to become a Soviet Republic of the Soviet Empire that the crypto Jews of Russia manufactured. And by doing that, the Armenians then slowly lost all their religion, all their culture, all their ties to their wonderful heritage. They went from being the best educated, most intellectual, most creative artists in the world to being a very impoverished Soviet Republic. And all of that was by design.
Of course, communism would destroy somebody, one's intellectual ideas and basically understanding, because it was prepared to destroy the mind and equalize as equal to other people, basically.
And it was also designed to destroy the intelligentsia, and the Armenians were the intelligentsia of both Russia and the Turkish Empire. So they were the first obvious targets of these Kabbalistic Jewish revolutions. They wanted to weaken their enemies as great as possible, and they wanted to prevent any counter-revolutions. And the Armenians, since they were the most intelligent, sophisticated, cultured people, were the most likely to be counter-revolutionaries. So that was another motivation that the Jews had to wipe out the Armenians. And they also tried to destroy Islam. The Young Turkish Revolution was a positivistic revolution, very much like the Bolshevik Revolution. It tried to replace religion with worship of the government, and it tried to replace culture with science. And those were consistent themes in both the Young Turk Revolution, which was actually a Jewish takeover of the Turkish Empire, and the Russian Revolution, which was actually a Jewish takeover of Russia. They immediately exterminated the intelligentsia, and they replace religion with state worship and culture with science.
I'm going to have to put you on hold. I'm going to take one phone call, and I will translate you whatever the question is.
Okay.
Are you listening, sir?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. I've been studying Armenian history on my own.
Could you speak louder, please?
I got a different point of view, as you know, he does, too. Ancient Armenia, it came during the time before, you know, Turkey was existed. It came the time before, I mean, the time during, you know, invented fire worshipping, even way before Christianity, before the Jews and all that kind of stuff, you know? Original Armenia began around Iran and all the way down to Turkey and to the Arab nations. So many cultures have conquered us, and you know, it's just the fact that we're still around is a good thing. But the fact I'm trying to make is that all these destroyed and stolen our land, like the Arabs, the Persians, the Turkish, and the Russians, they've stolen so much land and they never gave it back. And they should give all our lands back, the Arabs, the Persians, and the Turkish.
Okay, what is your question? Can you get to the question, please?
I'm saying there needs to be some reparation on from all these cultures destroying our Christian lands and all these Muslims taking over, and especially the Russians too. Or else I think Armenians should start a war with all these Arabs and Persians and Turkey and lands back and expand the empire again, because they're stealing from us too.
Okay, thank you
very
much.
Not fair.
Stop. I'm back. I'm sorry. It's just an opinion somebody was giving. It's not a question. I'm going to basically keep the question to you. I'm going to basically ask you, keep on asking you the questions. What role did Freemasonry have besides the crypto Jews in the Armenian genocide, as you research?
Freemasonry was very significant, and here we enter into the plan that was revealed in the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, which I must say many people assert was a forgery, and in general in the academic community is considered a forgery. But it made amazing predictions which came true in both the so-called Young Turk Revolution and in the Bolshevik Revolution. And at the time that both of those events took place, many people, including many governments, investigated the protocols and concluded that they were in fact true. Mm-hmm. Now, these Masonic, Judeo-Masonic revolutionary schemes went way back, and there was a man in France named...
I'm sorry, I'm going to ask you one more time. You're saying Judeo-Masonic. Could you make it plain? I would like to understand it more clear. What do you mean by Judeo-Masonic?
Well, let's investigate what Freemasonry is. Freemasonry is a setup of lodges and secret societies in which powerful people are able to recruit people and learn all their personal secrets and gain compromised people. They were also places where intellectuals could express secret and scientific ideas which were forbidden by the government or frowned upon. For example, they could be openly atheistic in Freemasonic lodges, so that attracted a lot of that kind of people. But the fundamental purpose of the Masonic lodges and the reason why Jews became intimately involved in them was that it afforded them the opportunity to create revolutions. Mm-hmm. There were Jewish Masonic societies founded in America immediately before the American Revolution, and they were heavily involved in it. There were Jewish Masonic institutions established in France immediately before the French Revolution.
Are you talking about like such as B'nai B'rith and similar to?
B'nai B'rith was patterned after Freemasonry, but it came a little bit later. That mm-hmm. was, I think, about 50 years after what I'm talking about, maybe a couple decades less than that. But again, in the French Revolution, you had descendants of Jacob Frank, who was another Jewish king who believed that he was the Messiah and had inherited the soul of Shabbatai Tzevi, which is in the mind of this cult of Jews, at the actual soul of God.
Jacob Frank happened to be Satanist, I believe.
Well, that's another aspect of Judaism that many people don't understand, is that Judaism is a dualistic belief. They believe that both evil and good come from God. Mm-hmm. And they cite passages in the Talmud such as Sanhedrin Folio 97a. There are passages in Job and passages in Isaiah which specifically state that both evil and good come from God. So they believe that in order for them to attain ultimate power and to be most godlike, they have to practice both evil and good. And they also believe that in order for the Jewish Messiah to arrive and take over the world, they have to convert the whole world to evil, so that God will be forced to come down and cleanse the world. And he will cleanse the world by bringing the Jewish Messiah. Mm-hmm. So when you say that Jacob Frank was a Satanist, it's more than that. It's that he tried to make the world degenerate in order to provoke God to cleanse the world.
Okay.
And so, he would practice incest and have weird, wild sexual parties, and he infiltrated himself into the Polish government in that way, and the Frankish Jews took over the government and the Catholic Church of Poland and destroyed Poland, which was at one time an enormous empire and highly influential in European affairs. And that was the methods that they used, is that they would pretend to be another religion and another people. They would pretend to be Polish Catholics to take over Poland. They would pretend to be English Protestants to take over England. They would pretend to be Turkish Muslims to take over Turkey.
Now, in your research, have you done any research on, have you come to any conclusion on American missionaries in Armenia who were very much infiltrated by Freemasonry, who were there to do more of Freemasonry job than Christian job?
I've seen that more among the British. The American Christian missionaries, in my research, I've seen were used in order to provoke paranoia in the Sultan. The Jewish bankers would whisper in the Sultan's ear that missionaries were trying to subvert the Turkish Empire and would conduct a Christian revolution that would destroy Islam. And that made the Sultan very paranoid, and that was what provoked him to start attacking Christians in the Turkish Empire. Mm-hmm. As far as infiltration, yes, there were Zionists who were involved with Lord Palmerston and other British Zionists, and I'm sure the same was going on with Americans because there was a strong Zionist movement in America at that time as well. And what you say makes sense. I haven't researched it personally. I've seen other articles on it where they discussed it. But we also had other Zionist infiltrators in the Young Turk Revolution, such as Vladimir Jabotinsky, who founded revisionist Zionism, was working as a propagandist in the Young Turk Revolution. And another very influential Freemasonic infiltrator was a man who went under the codename Parvus, whose real name was Alexander Israel Nazarovich Helfand. And he funded Trotsky and arranged for Trotsky and Lenin to travel to Russia in order to take over the Russian Revolution and hand it over to the Bolshevik Revolution in the October Revolution. He was heavily involved in that. He was also involved in the 1905 Russian Revolution, and he was another propagandist within the Young Turk movement for wars and for what they called, I think, Turkization, where they would try to make the entire empire Muslim and Turkish, mm-hmm. and in so doing, swat the Christians in the nose in the Balkans to provoke the Balkan Wars.
So, as a result of that,
the Armenians really suffered because they were Christian.
So, going back to the question of Freemasonry and Judaism, basically, there are, if somebody is in a Freemasonry lodge and he belongs to Freemasonry, the same meetings were done during the before the genocide by the Young Turks and the Armenians in the Freemasonic lodges. Are we trying to come to a conclusion that some of the Armenian leaders were Freemasons then?
I would say absolutely. They were not only Freemasons, they had also their own independent revolutionary movement. I forget the name, the Dashnak, and the, who was the other one? Starts with an H.
Hunchak.
Hunchakanians, something like that.
Hunchakian, right.
And they became infiltrated by the Jewish Masonic revolutionaries, who were centered out of Salonika, Greece, and who produced Emmanuel Carrasco, Javid Bai, Talat Pasha, Enver Pasha, all of the prominent leaders of the Committee of Union and Progress who conducted the revolution, deposed the Sultan, and committed the most atrocious period of the Armenian genocide, especially in 1915. And the way they would phrase their orders matched exactly the Jewish commandments in the Hebrew Bible on how the Jews should exterminate the Amalekites and how they should blot out their name forever. Their orders would read almost verbatim as if they had been taken out of the Hebrew Bible, which I find very telling. And I should also point out that the Muslims resisted what these crypto-Jewish Young Turks were telling them to do, and that they had a difficult time getting the Turkish Muslims to wipe them out, and they would often try to invoke the Kurds to slaughter the Armenians because the Kurds were poorer and were more apt to do it. And they did that by promising the Kurds and the Turks all the property they could steal from the Armenians. And the Armenians were the richest community in the Turkish Empire. They even exceeded the wealth of the Greeks and the Jews. Not at the top level. The Jewish bankers were the wealthiest people in the world. But the Armenian people as a whole were wealthier than the Jews within the Turkish Empire and within the Russian Empire.
The next question I'd like to come to is, what are you are you willing to publish your book, the book that you wrote? And of course, it's 543 pages, I believe. And when is it that you wrote that book, and how long it's been on the internet?
I began writing that book, I believe, sometime, probably in August of 2006. I think I put up the first chapter in October, and I'm certain I had it finished by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
My motivation at the time was to prompt other research, because within my book I cite many sources which have not yet been explored. For example, the correspondence that took place in the London Times in 1911 when the crypto-Jewish Young Turks slaughtered the Armenians in Adana. And there's very extensive correspondence that was published in the London Times at that time in 1911, where they identify all the Young Turk leaders as Jews, and they plead with the Jews in England to try to stop what is taking place, because they knew that ultimately what the Jewish atrocities against the Armenians would result in a backlash against Jews worldwide. And a very similar correspondence took place in the Jewish Chronicle and in the London Times after the Bolshevik Revolution, where people were pleading with British Jews and Western Jews to repudiate what the Russian Jews like Trotsky were doing in Russia, because they were afraid that ultimately there would be a terrible backlash, and they even said a Holocaust of the Jews if they didn't do it. And they were exactly right, because Nazism, one of the forces that Nazism used to turn people against Jewish people and to cause them to hate them, was the example of the millions that the Bolshevik Jews slaughtered within the Russian Empire.
And have you had, since you published it on the internet, have you had any support by the Armenian community?
You're the first.
So nobody was interested so far?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. I don't think it's going to be the last.
Well, thank you. I hope so, because I think it's very important. This portrays the black aspect of Armenian history, but it also reflects, I think, the most wonderful period of Armenian history, which immediately preceded the genocide, when the Armenians flowered within the Turkish Empire and contributed so much to the general culture of the world. And I hope that Armenians can recapture that culture and realize what was deliberately done to them to destroy that culture, so that they can start to heal the wounds and protect themselves from any future attacks. Because it appears that the Zionists are again trying to provoke a war in the region, again utilizing the Kurds by promising, as they promised the Armenians, an independent nation after World War III. They're telling the Kurdish people, and there are documented by the BBC, mm-hmm. Mossad agents operating in the Kurdish region of Iraq, training them to provoke the Turks to then attack the Kurds. And they promised them that at the end of this Middle Eastern-inspired World War III, that the Kurds will finally be able to form an independent Kurdistan, and that Israel will expand into Greater Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates and will serve to protect the Kurds from other Muslims. And it's a very dangerous situation. And another motivation for me to write this book was to expose how World War I was instigated by Zionist Jews, how World War II was instigated by Zionist Jews, which I go more deeply into in my book, The Manufacture and Sale of St. Einstein, in order to make people aware of how these machinations come about and how we can keep them from happening. And a good example in modern history is what the Zionists did to Lebanon to destroy that beautiful country, by pitting the Christians against the Muslims with false flag terrorism. Mossad agents would go up into Lebanon and pretend to be Sunni Muslims and shoot Shiite Muslims and shoot Christians, and then they would pretend to be Christian Lebanese and shoot Shia Muslims and shoot Sunni Muslims in order to create a civil war and to pit Christians against Muslims and Muslims against one another. And the same process, I'm sure, well, it's been proven, is happening within Iraq itself, where you have the Kurds in the north, the Sunnis in the southwest, and the Shia in the southeast, and you have Zionists pitting these people against one another in order to create a conflagration where they'll be able to draw Turkey, Syria, and Iran into a broader war. And all of this is being done so that Israel can expand its boundaries and so that it can break and balkanize all these large nations into smaller nations, which it will have an easy time controlling.
And I'm going to have to put you on hold, because I'm getting a lot of phone calls. I'm going to take one phone call. Are you going to sing? Are you?
Yes. Hi. I just wanted to first of of all, thank, I just tuned in. I have no idea who's talking, but I want to thank him for educating us on this topic. It's a very important topic. And I just have a question. Is he in any way worried about, you know, spreading this news or anything? Like, is his life in danger?
I can ask him that. He had partially, it's on the internet. I can ask him that, and he's going to stay online and listen to that answer.
Oh.
Christopher, I'm back.
Yes.
The question was, thank you very much for publishing this, and are you scared of your life for this?
I take precautions. I'm aware of the danger, and whatever my fate is, will be.
God will protect you.
I'm far more frightened of World War III and the destruction of humanity than I am concerned about myself in a selfish way.
Thank you very much.
If what I say is wrong, then I hope that people will bring forth what they believe to be that I have said that they think is wrong, and we can discuss it in a civilized way. I know that there have been smear campaigns against me, and there have been threats against me, and that is typical of what happens when you expose these things. But I think the information is out, and that is my best protection. For example, coming on your show, and if I may, I'd like to give the website where people can download the book
for
free.
Sure.
It is JewishRacism.com, as if Jewish racism were one word, JEWISHRACISM.com. And they'll be able to download both my books, The Jewish Genocide of Armenian Christians and The Manufacture and Sale of St. Einstein, where I go very deeply into the processes by which Zionist Jews have created revolutions worldwide. And again, I'd like to go back to that very influential Zionist Jew who went under the name of Parvus, whose real name was Alexander Israel Lazarevich Helfand.
Are you saying with a P like Paul?
Yes, P-A-R-V-U-S.
Paros, yes.
He was very famous for his dealings with Lenin and Trotsky in the Russian Revolution, and also for his dealings in the Young Turk Revolution. And he created the idea of permanent revolution, which the crypto-Jew Leon Trotsky, who was born Lev Bronstein, adopted as permanent revolution and world revolution. And we today in America are being misled by the descendants of these Trotskyite Jews who, for example, Irving Kristol, who have morphed this idea of permanent revolution into the modern neoconservative movement of war and permanent regime change. Now, when they say regime change, it's really code for revolution. And they are trying to instigate permanent war in the Middle East and permanent revolution, which will eventually, of necessity, touch upon the Armenian community in the Middle East, not only in Armenia, but throughout the Middle East, in Iran and in Lebanon and in other parts of Syria as well. And this is an extension of the Trotskyite ideal that was started by Parvus of permanent revolution. And there's a direct lineage of Jewish families that go back. And you had Leo Strauss was involved in formulating this philosophy, and Schachtman was another one who was involved in formulating this philosophy. But it all began with a propagandist who was heavily involved in the Young Turk Revolution at one time.
The next question, until today, the United States government has not acknowledged or has not even recognized the Armenian Genocide. Could you elaborate who has been against it? I'm sure Christians have not been against it.
No, Christians have not been against it. My understanding is that bills have come up from time to time to establish a resolution acknowledging the genocide, and they have been opposed by Jewish organizations. I believe the ADL and AIPAC has exerted its influence to keep this from happening. And the United States is not unique. I think in Israel, Tzipi Livni and others have opposed resolutions acknowledging the genocide and have opposed Turkey's being forced to acknowledge the genocide. Now, why would Jews be opposed to that? One reason would be that they want to keep the Holocaust of European Jewry as a unique event in history and have a selfish interest that way. But I think a more substantial fact is that when people start digging into this Armenian genocide, it's inevitable that they will discover that all the leaders of the Young Turk, all the significant leaders of the Young Turks, were Jews from Salonika, and that it was a Zionist Jewish movement to sacrifice the Armenians for the sake of establishing a Jewish state in Palestine, which the Jews had no right to do.
The Zionist movement, the founder was Herzl, as we know. Wasn't it at one point, didn't he convert to Catholic religion, Christian?
I've heard stories like that, and I've heard that he repudiated the Zionist movement shortly before he died. I think he died either in 1904 or 1905, I think 1904. But Herzl was, again, basically a front man for the Jewish bankers. The Zionist movement actually predates Herzl, and Herzl was used as a tool.
Right.
Because, as I said before, the Zionists were afraid that if they moved hastily into Palestine, they would face several obstacles. The Arabs, not necessarily the Turks, but the Arab Muslims would oppose them and consider them al-Dajjal, the Antichrist, and the Catholic Church would oppose them as being the Antichrist, and the Jews themselves didn't want to go. And the Rothschilds, even back in the early 1800s, were calling for a Zionist movement, and they had to take away the idea that it was a religious movement. That's why they created the idea of political Zionism. But you see rabbis today going back and showing that Herzl and all the others were secretly simply fulfilling Jewish messianic religious prophecies in a political way. And this was established as a formal idea by Moses Hess in, I think, 1862 in his book Roman Jerusalem, in which he asserted the idea that the Jewish people itself has to act as the Jewish Messiah and restore itself to Palestine. And Hess predicted in that time that there would be a race war between the Germans and the Slav, and that that could be used to create an environment in which the Jews could restore themselves to Palestine. And he also created the idea of national socialism as a racial theory, which was adopted by the Nazis. Nazi ideology is a direct product of Zionist ideology.
And the other question I'd like to have, which it's not about the genocide. In your book, you have a unique part where it says the Armenians are the chosen people. Where did you come to that conclusion? What kind of solid facts do you have?
I think you're quoting from Reverend Fillion. He's actually the one who said that the Jews were the chosen people and then the Armenians became the chosen people because they were the first Christians.
Right.
And also that Mount Ararat is in Armenia.
Right.
And that the Garden of Eden, in his deduction, was in Armenia, and that the Battle of Armageddon, in his conclusions, would take place in Armenia. But I think what he was doing, he was actually a Zionist agent who was setting up the Armenians to sacrifice themselves for the sake of the Jews and for the sake of an Armenian nation at the end of the Battle of Armageddon. It was a trap.
I'm going to put you on hold one more time. Are you listening?
Hello, Barna Gianni.
Yeah, Kishma Parsa, you take Arovic.
Hey,
Lav Parkasu. Christopher John Jerkins. Big Jerkins, B.O.
Nikolai Sarkozin for Antarvede versus Hungarian background.
Չեմ հասկանալ որ հարցումը
Նիկոլայ Սարկոզին որ ընդերվել է Ֆրանսիայի նախագահ ուրեմն հունգարացի հրյայի բան ունի ինչպես ասեմ հունգարիայի հրյաների պատմության մեջ կա այդ հունգարացի հրյա պետք է լինի հայրը կամ իր մայրի կողմից ասեմ մոր կողմից ամենայնիվս կարելի է խնդրեմ ասել ում շահի ում շահի կլինի, կամ ով է ավելի շատ, այսինքն օգտվում այդ իր համբրությունից, որ ընտրվեց, ում շահին կլինի, որ երկիրը ավելի, այսինքն...
Եկեք այսօր մեր ցեղասպանության հարցերով սպանենք, նյութը արդեն կփոխվի, որ ուրիշ տեղ ենթադրենք. Okay, Christopher, I'm back again with the same topic. Thank you for being patient with us. We have five more minutes left for our topic. I would like you to I'm going to give you the time to talk for 2 minutes, give your opinion, and basically I want you to tell the Armenian community, what's next? What should we do next?
The Armenian community has a very unique history and a very wonderful history, as well as this black spot on that beautiful history. And I hope that the Armenian community again views themselves as a people who are intellectual, who are spiritual, and who have an inner strength and a beauty that was widely recognized at one time as being the finest on the face of the earth. And I hope that the Armenian community can become cohesive and become a force to expose what the Zionist Jews did to them and what the Zionist Jews are today doing to the Middle East and to the world at large. Because what they did to the Armenians, especially in 1915, was a part of an ongoing process. It's a process of destruction. And when you listen to the speeches of neoconservative Zionist Jews in America today, they want to continue this process of destruction, of permanent revolution, which they call regime change, and of permanent wars. And we are at a critical moment in human history where this same force that sought to slaughter every Armenian down to the last man, woman, and child is trying to provoke a war with Iran and with Syria, and is trying to provoke the Turks to attack the Kurds in northern Iraq to spark this war. And I think the Armenians have a self-interest, and since Armenians are such a beautiful people, that if they were to become a cohesive force, they could become a political force to expose this and to try to prevent it.
So basically, what would you say to the Christians who believe into Zionism and they stand for state of basically chosen people?
I would say that they are adhering to anti-Christian beliefs which were introduced into dispensational Christianity, again, by crypto-Jews, by Jews who pretended to be Christians and introduced these beliefs. For example, the belief in the rapture was created by Jesuit crypto-Jews, Ribeiro and Lacunza, and this belief that these American Christians, and I think there are 30 or 40 million of them, believe that they have to start a war against Russia and create a nuclear war so that 2 billion human beings will be killed, and they believe selfishly that when they provoke this war, they themselves will be raptured up into heaven and will not have to suffer for it. And they are so selfish that they're willing to make everyone else suffer for it so that this can happen, and then believe that Jesus will then come. Now, these beliefs are nowhere to be found in the New Testament. They were manufactured by Jews who took over the Jesuit movement, and the Jesuit movement was started by Jews, and they created all these beliefs because they wanted to create a war between Protestant Christians and Catholics. But today they're using that to try to provoke a World War III and to make it a nuclear world war. And these Christian Zionists are actually hated by Jews, as all Christians traditionally have been hated by Jews. And when I say Jews, I'm speaking in very general terms, and I shouldn't. I should be very specific and say that those Zionist Jews who are using these Christians dislike them and consider them foolish and stupid, and they have bribed and blackmailed their leaders in order to lead these Christians again into fighting against Muslims, just as they did by killing the Armenians to instigate the First World War. They are trying to create a war between Christianity and Islam to provoke the Third World War, which they believe will ultimately fulfill all their Jewish prophecies, and so that they can destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock and rebuild the Jewish temple and then anoint their Jewish king and rule the world from Zion. And as crazy as it sounds, you can actually find Jewish rabbis preaching those exact ideas in Israel.
Which is the Antichrist, basically.
If I were a Christian, I would certainly recognize the fact that it is the Antichrist, and it is certainly anti-Christian.
Right.
And it is exactly what was prophesied to happen in the book of Revelation.
Well, Christopher, we have come to the conclusion of our time. Thank you very much for joining with us, and very soon we will see you in our community. We are going to invite you here so we can have a big conference. Thank you very much again for joining with us today. I will call you tomorrow to thank you personally again.
Thank you very much, sir. I am very grateful for the opportunity to speak to the Armenian community, and I hope that my book is helpful, and I encourage people to read it, and if they have any objections, to email me, and I will consider whatever they have to say.
Thank you very much.
Ուրեմն, որովև
դեր մեր ժամը վերջացավ, անոնք որ հերախոսի վրա են գրնան, հերացանի վրա մնան, որով ինձ արդեն սիգնալներին մեր ժամը վերջացավ, ահա բացիկ լսեցինք Քրիստոֆեր Ջան Չորկենզին իր խոսակցությունը հայոց ցեղասպանության վերաբերյալ, որ քիրքը դա, անոնք որ հարցում ունին գրնան իրեն, իմեյլն են գրնակ, եթե իմեյլը չստացակ, ադրեսը գրնակ ինձ վերջի հերացանել եւ խոսինք այդ մասին, որովև դեր մեր ժամը վերջացավ, միջև քաշապատ ասված ցեզ